coming to a close to the end of this wonderful section of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 33 of Canto 3. We started yesterday reading the verse and a little bit of the purport of 26. I'm going to review that and then the rest of this long and inspiring purport. The scene is Devahuti is now physically alone but feeling fully protected at the same time. Her husband has gone, her son has gone. She's in this vimana, mystical flying city that's opulent beyond the opulence of the heavenly realm. And is detached from it, and we were hearing her the strength of that detachment was her attachment to the personality of Godhead. She has clear understanding that her son is not her son. Her son is her son, but is the Lord Vishnu. And so in this verse 26, she's meditating on Lord Vishnu, previous also. She's transferred the form from the form of Kapila to the form of Lord Vishnu, at least apparently. And many nice things within the purport, just some appreciation. The last line, kshina, klesha, apta, nirvritti. Similar to the first two items in devotional service that correspond with sadhana. She's not at the sadhana stage, she's beyond that, but kleshagni and shubhata, klesha, misery. So kleshagni, the eradication of material misery. It begins in the sadhana stage. She's beyond the sadhana stage, and now here it's being said completely gone. And shubhata, it gives transcendental bliss. So it's similar. The language is different, but apta nirvati. Apta nirvati means attained transcendental bliss. Her pursuit is not transcendental bliss. It's one of the lessons of Krishna consciousness. The interest in devotional service is service to the personality of Godhead. And in that mood of service to the personality of Godhead, absorption in the personality of Godhead, mentioned repeatedly here is what her mind was doing, not just only what her body was doing, but when one's mind is oriented that way, behind, you're directing the mind of a mind that's so oriented that way is buddhi, spiritual intelligence. And spiritual intelligence is given directly by the Supersoul or by Krishna to reach him. So she wants to reach him. Of course, you know, the Leela is interesting because it's her son. But the eternal abode of the personality of Godhead and eternally being situated this way, it's not going from point A to point B. It's a consciousness of being absorbed, immersed in Krishna consciousness. That's her only interest. And then the miseries of material existence are gone. She still has a body, but what we hear in the purport, disinterested, not unaware of, but disinterested in because of the strength of interest in transcendence or the personality of Godhead. And then the transcendental bliss factor because of that connection with the source of all bliss. Read the translation and purport. We'll stop paragraph by paragraph because it's really loaded. Her mind, Devahuti's mind, became completely engaged in the Supreme Lord. And she automatically realized the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman. As a Brahman-realized soul, she was freed from the designations of the material conception of life. Thus, all material pangs disappeared, and she attained transcendental bliss. So the purport is 3 pages long. The previous verse states that Devahuti was already conversant with the Absolute Truth. In fact, she says that way back in chapter 25, then she says it again. And Maitreya is affirming it again. And she's acquainted with the Absolute Truth by realization as well as by knowledge, jnana and vijnana. It may be questioned why she was meditating. Well, it's Satya Yuga, and she's doing what you do in Satya Yuga. The explanation is that when one theoretically, listen carefully, this sequence, when one theoretically discusses the Absolute Truth, he becomes situated in the impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth. We discussed this yesterday, so reviewing it, it's not like, okay, now you're on the Brahman realized platform and you're waiting for the next platform to come before you or you can attain it. That's not the meaning here. It's a subset. So again, when one theoretically discusses the Absolute Truth, he becomes situated in the impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth. Similarly, when one seriously discusses the subject matter of the form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes situated in meditation on him. If one has complete knowledge of the Supreme Lord, then knowledge of the impersonal Brahman is automatically realized. The Absolute Truth is realized by the knower according to 3 different angles of vision, namely impersonal Brahman, localized supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one is situated, therefore, in knowledge of the Supreme Person, this implies that one is already situated in the concept of supersoul and impersonal Brahman. So this is a nice explanation of the first line, which says, Brahmani avashtita matir. The process of that Kapila has explained to her includes the Sankhya philosophy, the process of meditation and devotional service. And they can be seen as something disconnected, or they can be seen as all part of the same thing. There's the knowing what's what, there's what the mind does, and there's what your heart or the soul does in relation to the body and the mind. Bhakti. And they all lead to bhakti. We hear that in the purport. So the matir, the what the mind does part, is she's situated in Brahman or Brahmani, avastita. And that's because she's absorbed in hearing about and remembering name, form, qualities, entourage, as stated here, of the Supreme Person. So Brahman is a subset. And we also discussed yesterday about a green mango and a ripe mango, and they're both a mango. So, for us, practitioners of, well, this is the next paragraph, but the practitioners of bhakti have Brahman realization. Aren't you glad to know that you have Brahman realization? But it's the green mango kind, not the ripe mango kind. Here's the second paragraph. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Brahmabhuta prasanatma. This means that unless one is freed from the material entanglement and situated in Brahman, there's no question of entering into the understanding of devotional service or engaging in Krishna consciousness. So, as you said yesterday, what are we doing? What's our eligibility for devotional service? It's mercy and saying yes or receiving that mercy and then beginning. Adau Shraddha Tatak Sarasanga Bhajana Kriya. So that's the green mango for us. One who is engaged in devotional service to Krishna, that's us, right? Or not? Beginning stage, Masamenas. Okay. Beginning. I mean, there's all these verses that said, and then devotional service began. You know? So when those verses mean, you know, unmixed devotional service. And so this is not pretend devotional service, it's preparatory for unmixed devotional service. There's certain conditions we have to strive for unmixed devotional service, because if we don't, we'll stay in the mixed position or go down. One who is engaged in devotional service to Krishna is understood to be already realized in the Brahman concept of life, because transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead includes knowledge of Brahman. Again, this is the green mango. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmano hi pratishta aham, : The concept of the Personality of Godhead does not depend on Brahman. That's chapter 14, the modes of nature chapter, and at the very end, Brahman is the basis, pratishta, and Krishna is the basis of Brahman. So everything is resting on Krishna. Brahman is resting on Krishna, not the other way. And then the varieties of material nature, according to the modes, that's resting on Krishna and his Brahman feature, the resting upon the Absolute Truth. The Vishnu Purana also confirms that one who has taken shelter of the all-auspicious Supreme Lord is already situated in the understanding of Brahman. In other words, one who is a Vaishnava is already a Brahmana, or at least becoming. Long discussion, or very deep subject matter that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote a paper on, Brahmanism and Vaishnavism, or Brahmanism and Vaishnavas, to address an audience that were debating this topic. And this is a synopsis of a long message. It's very detailed and has volumes of scriptural references to support it. Um, even for one who is born in a Brahmin family, one is not a qualified Brahmana by birth only unless one has the qualities of a Brahmana and that one has undergone the sanskaras of the position of a Brahmana. And in this age of Kali, people don't perform the Garbhadan sanskara commonly, and therefore birth doesn't make one eligible to be considered a Brahmana, what to speak of quality and character. On the other side, by the Panchatrika system, regardless of birth, one can become qualified. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Becoming qualified, not just engaging in devotional service in an external fashion, but in the, as she's doing, the absorption of the mind in the personality of Godhead. And from that also the other characteristics, sama, dhammakta, paksho, cham, etc. If you remember from the discussion on Monday, the topic of those 21 characteristics identified by Narada to Yudhisthira, where characteristics of a human being are described, so what to speak of a Brahmana amongst human beings. So we're being given, Prabhupada called it the elevator method, no qualification, engage in devotional service, become eligible to become a Brahmana. That's a big jump. So there's lots of things that have to happen in between, or let's say responsibility on our part to become nicely connected to Krishna by the merciful method given to us and develop these qualities. It's part of our responsibility, our service assignment. Become qualified. The potency is there and we have to have our receivers on and our service mood. And then those qualities can be decorated. Krishna is the decorator, we can be the receiver of the decoration. But it's part of the service assignment. Being a Vaishnava, having qualities of a Vaishnava and qualities of a Brahmana, it's no small thing. It's a great opportunity and it's a great responsibility. Next paragraph. Another significant point in this verse is that one has to observe the prescribed rules and regulations as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Nyuktahara viharasya. That's the sixth chapter verse where Krishna says one who is regulated in his eating, sleeping, work, and recreation can become peaceful and successful in the yoga process. That's the reference. When one engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, he still has to eat, sleep, defend, and mate because these are necessities of the body, but he performs such activities in a regulated way. Prabhupada translates this in that sixth chapter verse. Yukta means regulated. Yukta can mean different things, can be engaged in, but regulated. Regulated by what? Regulated by descending knowledge, the Vedas, and guidance from those who are knowledgeable in the Vedas, regulated by that. So including the bodily functions and the mental functions regulated by the scripture. Yuktahara Viharasya. So now these four. He has to eat Krishna Prasad. He has to sleep according to regulated principles. The principle is to reduce the duration of sleep and to reduce eating, taking only what is needed to keep the body fit. In short, the goal is spiritual advancement, nonsense gratification. So that's the nivritti marg method. Gradually, purposefully, not artificially, but striving to gradually diminish the activities of the body, the eating and sleeping, and now we're going to hear the next one. Sex life is, similarly, sex life must be reduced. Sex life is meant only for begetting Krishna-conscious children, otherwise there's no necessity of sex life. Nothing is prohibited, but everything is made yukta, regulated, with the higher purpose always in mind. By following all these rules and regulations of living, one becomes purified, and all misconceptions due to ignorance become nil. That's the last line. It's pretty easy. You put proper conception and it replaces the misconception. Dysfunctionality is replaced by functionality. Darkness is displaced by light. So, Jyotirgama. And cultivate that progressively in life. It is specifically mentioned here that the causes of material entanglement are completely vanquished. He's going back to the sadhana, or the cultivation, the regulated stage of bhakti. Now, she's at a very advanced stage of bhakti. And still, it's not that, okay, regulation, or, you know, the way that bhakti works is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Although there's different stages, he gives the example of a flower. In the next stage of the flower's growth and development, the previous stage is no longer visible. It's gone. Different is the evolution or the unfolding of bhakti, and the previous stage is still there. The form may not be exactly the same, but the previous stage is still there. So that example is very helpful to understand or appreciate. Bhakti's not linear. It's not, there's a bucket over here and then there's a bucket over there, and you're either in this bucket or that bucket, and that's it. It's not like that. So there's this continuing the detachment and the strength of attachment, and the more there's attachment to the Supreme, we'll hear it, the more there's detachment to the temporary. And so that one may be aware of what's going on in the temporary, and one may pay attention to it, I mean, deal with it or not deal with it, depending on service to Krishna requirements and other factors. Next paragraph. The Sanskrit statement, anarchanavritti, indicates that the body is unwanted. It's a heavy paragraph. We are spirit soul, and there was never any need of this material body. But because we wanted to enjoy the material body, we have this body through the material nature under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as we are reestablished in our original position of servitorship to the Supreme Lord, we begin to forget the necessities of the body, and at last we forget the body. Become the absent-minded professor. You're so absorbed in Krishna Tattva. A little experience with Prabhupada in Vrindavan. On the occasion of the installation of Krishna Balaram, lots of things were going on in the temple room, and lots of devotees were there because it was the temple opening and the installation. It was a big event. I mean, the governor of the UP came. That was, you know, interesting. And all the Goswamis of Vrindavan were in the temple room doing the installation ceremony for several days. And part of what was going on also is Prabhupada was conducting darshans in his room. So on one of those occasions of a darshan, just prior to the installation, somebody had some water in a cup, and the water in the cup spilled and they didn't clean it up. So when the darshan was over, Prabhupada rose, and as he was walking from that seat where he sits, there's that little fireplace to the right as you walk out, and his foot slipped on the water, and his ankle twisted, and his arms, he caught the fall of his body with his hands, and there was some twist in his wrists, or wrist. He stood up, and it was thunder and lightning and a big storm. Who was responsible? He was angry. I mean, for purpose of instruction, not otherwise. And, you know, I don't recall, I wasn't there, I heard this from others. Prabhupada said a number of things. And then he went to his room and he immediately requested ingredients for make a poultice. You know, some herbs and crush the herbs to bring down the swelling. And, you know, he used the first-class method of taking a big bale leaf with string and tying the poultice onto his wrist and to his ankle. You know, he knew exactly what to do to bring the swelling down. And I remember he performed the installation ceremony with that thing wrapped around his ankle. And because he spoke, I was seated right in front of him, and as his feet, because it was swollen, it was a little extended rather than folded under, and you could see the poultice, and, you know, the leaf and the string. So he took care of the body. He knew what to do to take care of the body. He wasn't negligent, but he wasn't attached either. And then sometime later, he looked at his wrist and looked at his leg, looked at his body and said, "This body's getting old. Just should get rid of it." I mean, not just theoretically, but, you know, very deeply, just very detached. And clearly in the spiritual conception, and as is described here, Krishna, Krishna. As soon as we are reestablished in our original position of servitorship of the Supreme Lord, we begin to forget the necessities of the body, and at last we forget the body. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was described like that, similarly, that he would perform his duties, going to bath and etc., etc., just out of duty, but with kind of absent-minded. His absorption in the personality of Godhead. You say absent-minded, but with absorption in the personality of Godhead, to the extent that these things were done, but that wasn't the focus. The focus for us, we'll hear, is we need purification. These activities, these regulations, help bring purification. So the activity should be done not in and of themselves, but for purification. So that clarity of fixing the mind on the personality of Godhead becomes possible for us. Otherwise, we'll be distracted by the temporary. And even we try to bring the mind back, the mind will keep going back to the temporary. It's how material nature works. So affinity, attraction for the personality of Godhead is what we're hearing is Devahuti became accomplished in by the instructions of Kapila, and she followed them. Next paragraph. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 more. Sometimes in a dream we get a particular type of body with which to work in the dream. I may dream that I'm flying in the sky, or that I've gone into the forest, or some unknown place. But as soon as I'm awake, I forget all those bodies. Similarly, when one is Krishna conscious, fully devoted, he forgets all his changes of body. We're always changing bodies, beginning at birth from the womb of the mother, but when we awaken to Krishna consciousness, we forget all these bodies. The bodily necessities become secondary, for the primary necessity is the engagement of the soul in real spiritual life. He puts a comma after real. The activities of devotional service in full Krishna consciousness are the cause of our being situated in transcendence. Now, it's not just the activities, but it's the in full Krishna consciousness. It's both. We don't neglect the activities, or we don't just do the activities and neglect the Krishna conscious purpose behind the activities. But the combination of the two, engaging the prescribed duty and always think of Krishna, is the cause of our being situated in transcendence. So even while you're doing things in this world, you're not consciously hankering for enjoyment of this world. It's otherworldly concentration and destination. And we'll hear this word concentration again. The words Bhagavati Atma Sankshaye, that's the second line of this verse. Bhagavati, it's Bhagavan. Atma Sankshaye, it's the supersoul. Atma Sankshaye, the soul within. Supreme soul within. Bhagavati Atma Sankshaye. Denote the personality of Godhead as the supreme soul or the soul of everyone. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam, quote, I am the seed of all entities. By taking shelter of the supreme being by the process of devotional service, one becomes fully situated in the concept of the personality of Godhead. I've been mentioning this all along, and I'm happy to say it again. There's three parts of what Kapila Dev is giving to Devahuti. Sankhya, Dhyan, we hear this word Dhyan in a moment, and Bhakti. And all of them are in Bhagavad Gita too. Sankhya, Dhyan, and Bhakti. And it's actually different parts of the same entity. It may be I prefer this, or I prefer that, or I prefer the other, but actually to do any one of them properly and fully, it's one entity. The purpose of this is to help one in that. It leads to that. So what the goal is, the top rung of the yoga ladder, is a really important subject. That final verse of chapter 6 in the middle. Six chapters are explaining that, last verse of chapter 6. What the mind does and what the inclination of the soul is. That's the topmost yoga. That's what Devahuti's doing. Read it again. By taking shelter of the Supreme Being by the process of devotional service, one becomes fully situated in the concept of the personality of God. Back to the first paragraph. there's the theoretical discussion, and then there's the practical engagement in devotional service. If done properly, the mind then becomes situated in the concept of the personality of Godhead. So it's concept, conceptual, but as we cultivate, it's more than conceptual, it's experiential. There's the sadhana stage matures if we engage in it properly. This message is contained in a later paragraph. It's really a beautiful purport. As described by Kapila, Madguna Shruti Matrena, that's from chapter 29. This is chapter 33. We'll go back there. : One who is fully Krishna conscious, situated in the personality of Godhead, is immediately saturated with love of God as soon as he hears about the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So that's the ripe mango. And the ripe mango, the characteristic of the ripe mango is you hear about and the mind goes. You know, the practice stage, you hear about it, the mind distracts, you try to bring it back. And this chapter 29, which is where this reference comes from, is Devahuti asking, you've described devotional service that's transcendental. Is it possible that one who's not transcendental can engage in devotional service according to the modes of nature they're influenced by? And the answer is yes. It doesn't diminish the transcendental nature of bhakti if you're in the modes. But your experience is going to be different. And your attitude towards bhakti is going to be different. So the mode of ignorance, mode of passion, mode of goodness. This verse, this reference, is describing bhakti that's beyond the modes. And bhakti that's beyond the modes is characterized by, as soon as you hear, the mind goes. And the metaphor is the Ganges flowing downstream. You don't have to say, okay, Ganges, you can go downstream now. Ganges going down, it's a rainy season, and the water is moving fast. The water goes downstream. Similarly, the mind hearing Krishna Katha, or the form of the Lord, or the holy name, or any of the manifestations of Krishna, the mind goes. Like this nice example of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, when Mukunda brought Gadadhar Pandit to meet him. Gadadhar Pandit, whose mood was total renunciation, he had no interest in anything of material opulence kind of lifestyle. Here's Pundarik Vidyanidhi looking like, whoa, I want out of here. This person is a sense gratifier. So Mukunda knew the qualification, and so he sang some verse, because he was a good singer. He sang some verse from the Bhagavatam, and just hearing the verse from the Bhagavatam, Pundarik Vidyanidhi lost it. He just fell from his seat and onto the ground and exhibiting symptoms of ecstatic love. Because the mind, he was at that stage, the mind just went. That's the characteristic of devotional service beyond the modes. That's the reference that Prabhupada is making, saying that Devahuti is at that stage. Obviously, she's beyond the modes of nature and she's engaged in devotional service according to the instruction given to her by Kapila, and her mind goes to the personality of Godhead effortlessly, spontaneously, ecstatically. Three more paragraphs. It's pretty good purport, huh? Devahuti was fully instructed by her son Kapila Dev on how to concentrate her mind on the Vishnu form in full detail. Following the instructions of her son in the matter of devotional service, she contemplated the form of the Lord within herself with great devotional service, great devotional love. Knowledge, meditation, bhakti. they go together, and she put them all together. And she's in this ecstatic stage of devotional love. That is the perfection of Brahman realization, or the mystic yoga system, or devotional service. At the ultimate issue, when one is fully absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Lord and meditates on Him constantly, that's the highest perfection. Bhagavad Gita confirms that one who is always absorbed in such a way is to be considered the topmost yogi. It's, you know, chapter 6, last verse. Next to the last paragraph. The real purpose of all processes of transcendental realization, such as Gyan Yoga, Dhyan Yoga, or Bhakti Yoga, is to arrive at the point of devotional service. The purpose of Bhakti Yoga is to arrive at the position of devotional service. You know, and then devotional service begins. It's to come to this mature stage. We're not at the mature stage. We should be cultivating the mature stage. And we're hearing features of what that is. It's certainly a big feature is what the mind does. And things that the body does help, you know, like chanting, something that the body does, or reading, something that the body does and the mind does, it helps bring the mature stage if done properly. If one endeavors simply to achieve knowledge of the Absolute Truth or the Supersoul but has no devotional service, he labors without gaining the real result. This is compared to being the husks of wheat after the grains have already been removed. It's a verse in Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna. Exactly that example. Unless one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the ultimate goal, it is valueless simply to speculate or perform mystic yoga practice in the Ashtanga. Listen to this. In the Ashtanga yoga system, the seventh stage of perfection is dhyana. Right? Dhyana dharana samadhi, or dharana dhyana samadhi. Seventh stage. This dhyana is the third stage in devotional service. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. He's equating Vishnu Smaranam as the seventh stage of the Ashtanga Yoga system. What's that? There are nine stages of devotional service. The first is hearing, then comes chanting, then comes contemplating. By executing devotional service, therefore, one automatically becomes an expert gyani and an expert yogi. In other words, jnana and yoga are different preliminary stages of devotional service. So here's a quiz question. On Tuesday, we discussed this little section from Bhagavata Mahatmya, prompted by Uma's question and some reference that she was aware of. And we heard, according to Padma Purana, this Bhagavat Mahatmya section, that there are four particular aspects of the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam that can bring one the full fruit or the full benefit that the Bhagavatam can provide, the hearing of the Bhagavatam can provide. Here is mentioned one of them, this dhyana, concentration of the mind. So can you, upon the subject matter that one has heard, it's not just hearing, but like the narration from Padma Purana, there was a ghost. And the ghost heard the Bhagavatam, but what he did at night was he did some worship, doesn't say how he did it, and he was concentrating his mind on the message that he heard. So I'm trying to help us, myself included, you know, concentrate, bring the mind to what we heard, and then in practical terms, how to apply it. So, let's see if someone, we'll see if we can get the list of four different people that can remember the four things. What's the first one?
I remember the second one.
Okay, second one.
It was humility about one's actual position.
Yeah. So just for, perfect. The Sanskrit, because it helps to hear the Sanskrit, to remember the message, is Swasmin Dhinatve Bhavana. Swasmin Dhinatve Bhavana. Dina is humility. Humility of a realistic conception of oneself, the opposite of narcissism. A realistic conception of who you are. You know, not an inflated conception of who you are, an overvalued conception of who you are. Humility in terms of conceiving or thinking of oneself. Another one. Yes. Yes. That's the first one. Vishvaso Guru Vakyesu. Vak means speaking. Guru Vakyesu is hearing the words of the spiritual master. And Vishvaso is a word that means faith. It's strong faith in the words heard. It means also the source of what is being spoken, you know, the scripture. And that the scripture is being transparently vibrated or represented or repeated. Vishvaso Guru Vakyeshu. Schubert, what's the third one?
Understanding the thoughts of the
mind. Yes. Mana, it's mano, dosha, jayash. Jaya, victory over the faults of the mind. The mind's got too many faults. Get full engagement. But directing the mind and withdrawing the mind from where it should not be going in various ways, including, you know, the broad sense, the temporary, and bring the mind to sat. And then the fourth is this, what is being described here by Dhyan, the third process of bhakti, or Vishnu Smarana. Katayam nishchala matihi. Again, it's matihi, what the mind does, and nishchala matihi, the non-flickering, or the concentration of the mind in katayam, in what one has heard. And these four combined, according to this nice section of Bhagavat Mahatmya, this is the qualification, these four together are the qualifications that help one get the full benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're not there, we're getting some benefit, and these are areas that will help us, areas of improvement, that will help us get to where we want to go in Krishna consciousness. Final paragraph. Devahuti was expert in accepting the real substance. Semicolon. She contemplated the form of Vishnu in detail as advised by her smiling son Kapiladev. At the same time, she was thinking of Kapiladev, who is the Supreme Personality of God, and therefore she completely perfected her austerities, penances, and transcendental realization. Prabhupada often speaks of these other things, penances, austerities, and sacrifice, and so forth and so on. He calls them high-grade activities. And while they're high-grade activities, they're subordinate to and dependent upon bhakti, and the fruit of them is to bring one to unmixed bhakti, or the wet wood becomes dry wood so it can ignite. She's in the fire of devotional service. So it's a really nice role model or example to hear about and follow, become inspired by. That's a big reason why this Puranic narration is there. The elements can be understood or heard in some abstract fashion. We see how the elements fit into the life of a person. And it, oh, that's what it looks like. That's how you do it. It's very practical. Okay, let's see if there's any discussion. Or, yeah?
On that last point, Maharaj, last night, I read Prabhupada saying that real austerity and penance is to hear the Vedic literature from an authorized source.
Hmm.
And so last night at Tech Mahindra reading that, and I wanted to hear your comments on it.
Well, there's two parts. There's the authorized source, and then there's hearing. I mean, it's like Devahuti was expert in accepting the real substance. So that's hearing. You know, hearing in the complete sense. And we're not there because we have filters, we have contaminations. So we engage in the practice of hearing. And in the practice stage, that's, you know, our austerity is we don't do other stuff, we do that. Even I may not be at the stage where there's transcendental taste in the activity and in the subject matter itself. Certainly something, because purification is nice, and it feels right, you know, that there's that confirmation experientially, but we're not at the fullest stage, and so it's stages of hearing from the proper source. And I really like, you know, coming to the stage of Krishna consciousness that Devahuti was exhibiting was then the fulfillment of her austerities and penances and mystic yoga practice. It's really important to have a goal and a clear sense of the goal, and at all stages stay fixed on the goal, because there's movements of the material energy that move us this way, that way. So in other words, I've heard many times, you know, recently even, my participation in hearing and chanting activities is unsteady, you know, both in terms of time as well as quality. What to do? Recommit to the purpose, and according to your capacity, in a regulated manner, yukta, vihara, you do what you were doing yesterday, and then discussing amongst one another the merit that we're receiving, the good fortune we're receiving. And then encouraging and supporting one another to continue receiving that good fortune. That's what devotees do. You have something?
Is it okay if we revisit the progressive steps?
Is it okay if we do what?
Revisit the progressive steps question that I've been bringing up. Taking steps to make progress.
Okay.
I can sit down and understand the why, and then have commitment to the purpose.
Yeah.
And then make a decision about, you know, instead of being jack of all trades,
okay,
master of some. But I was also thinking that in order to be successful, two things. I would say that it would be useful to have the support of perhaps an individual to be like accountable to over the duration of whatever time it takes to complete the step.
Sure.
And also, just how you mentioned that devotees support, just now you just mentioned that. I would assume that the support of the community is also plays some role.
Of course.
In assisting.
Well, it plays a role. At the same time, one can become Krishna conscious in any circumstance. It's not circumstance dependent. So it's a great resource that Krishna kindly presents. And because there are people that practice Krishna consciousness in remote places. Mm-hmm. So my thoughts are going in. It's not that they're prevented from becoming Krishna conscious because they're in remote places. It's less fortunate to be in that circumstance in one sense, but then in another sense one becomes a bit more reliant on one's effort as opposed to being carried quote unquote by others. Like, you know, my effort is less because I'm being carried by others. That's not taking proper advantage of the resource of a community, of supportive community, Krishna conscious community. And being accountable, there's varieties of being accountable. You know, the buddy system is a common one. It doesn't require somebody that's, you know, a luminary in the sky. It can be the buddy system. Be accountable. Case in point, I know some devotees that have a hard time getting up in the morning. And so with the buddy system, they have somebody that doesn't have a problem getting up in the morning to call them, and they leave their phone on. And then the person calls back again, and you know, it's like a snooze alarm. Call back in 3 minutes. Did you get up? Call back another 3 minutes. Did you get up? And then, you know, okay, then when you've bathed, we'll chant one round together on a speakerphone. You know, so it's, you know, so the buddy system can be the accountable element. It can be other or combination. But certainly, being accountable helps one go the next step, the step that's chosen, the doable next step. And that's not a botheration, it's an asset to have such people that care, and they'll help you go the next step. That's what a friend is. In the Institute House, I think that's what they call it, Vast, where Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to stay, that house on top of the hill in Gitanagari, one of the signs on the wall, I now have it in New York and Chicago on my desk, and you know, the description of a friend, took an image of it and printed it. And it goes like this: a friend who is a person you can be accountable to, or a possible person. A friend is one who knows who you are. They've accepted you. They know your strengths and your weaknesses, and they're continuing to help you grow. Something like that. That's not how it. It's much more eloquent and elegant, but. They're committed to not, you know, manage you, but to accept you and understand you and help you grow. That's a friend. Nice description of friendship. So we Vaishnava Sangha. And that's sadhu sangha. It doesn't have to be the luminary in the sky. It can be someone that's like you or like oneself trying to strive for attachment to sat and detachment from asat. Sadhu sangha. And that's, you know, that's what communities are as well. Good communities. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj was saying that our eligibility of bhakti is like three parts. You have mercy, saying is to the mercy and the beginning. So I was just thinking, I'm understanding the part of mercy is like we are receiving mercy by doing devotional service or serving devotees, chanting the holy name. But what does that mean? I mean, more clarification of saying is to the mercy.
Well, what does it mean? It's something that you do. It's something that you feel. It's something that you know. That it's behavioral. It's cognitive. And it's affective. All three, and ultimately, it's resting upon to be steady in that. It's resting upon the soul or the heart or the acceptance of a goal of life. I want to be in Krishna's association. I've forgotten. I've abandoned that association, and I'm struggling here. I want to be, so that's the why. I want to be in Krishna's association. And then I need mercy because I can't do this on my own. So that's the cognitive part, and then the affective part, and the behavior part. It's all part of saying yes to the descending mercy, so I can get to where I want to be with Krishna. Does that do it? You want something else?
I think that's good. Maybe I can print it.
Okay. You have something? Yeah. Your voice is soft, speak a little louder.
I don't know if this was already discussed, but since you were speaking right on Lord Kapila, I was wondering if you could discuss or speak through the...
If I could do what?
If you could discuss the different types of Shakti Vish avatar, because...
Discuss the different...
Types of Shakti Vish avatars.
Shakti
Vish avatar, the different types. From yesterday evening? Yesterday evening, there was a presentation on Lord Kapila. And Lord Kapila isn't a Shaktivesh avatar. He's an Angsa avatar. And amongst Angsa avatars, that means Vishnu Tattva, he's of a particular category. And there's subsets. I mean, we've covered that. And so there's the category he belongs to is where the full potency of Vishnu is not exhibited, and there's two types of those. But you wanted to hear about Shaktivesh avatars.
No, we weren't at the class.
Huh?
We weren't at the class.
But you want to hear about Shaktivesh avatars.
No, it's fine. As far as I understood, I had the impression that Kapila Dev was a Shaktivesh avatar, but I must be fine.
Your voice is just off.
Well, she understood. Well, just
listen to the recording.
Kapila Dev was Shaktivesh avatar.
According to Laghu Bhagavatamrita, he is Vishnu Tattva. Angsa avatar. Vishnu Tattva. So before Kapila appeared, Lord Vishnu, standing on the shoulders of Garuda, appeared before Kardama and said, I know your heart's desire, I'll become your son. So he became his son, Vishnu Tattva, not Shaktivesh. There may be some other reference besides Laghu Bhagavatamrita, but Rupa Goswami is pretty authoritative. There may be some other reference, but because I have a folio version, I just went to Laghu Bhagavatamrita and put in Kapila and Kapiladev and all the hits, and there's nothing that says he's in the category of Shaktivesh. There is something that says, so there may be some other reference elsewhere. It's possible that there are different Kapilas because time is cyclical and some are not Angsha avatar. Rupa Goswami doesn't mention it. Vishnu Tattva. It goes further. aside from he doesn't exhibit the fullness of the potency of Vishnu, there's two categories. One is less known and only appear for a short time. Mohini Murti is an example. And Hamsa avatar, who gives the Vedas to Lord Brahma. And the third that he mentions is Shukla, who are yoga avatars that we don't hear so much about. So like, you know, white Shukla avatar. Who knows anything about Shukla avatar? That's the only reference I know, is Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Then this other category of they don't exhibit the fullness of the potency of Vishnu is often sages that give knowledge. And Kapila is listed there. Dhanvantri is another. Dattatreya is another. Vishnu form. Vyasa is listed there. Now, Vyasa is in the category of Shaktivesh avatar also. But that you'll find in the Shaktivesh section of Lagu Bhagavatamrita.
One thing that I was understanding that the Sankhya that's being spoken in Bhagavad Gita or Kapiladeva is a personal Sankhya, it's not the impersonal or incomplete.
Yes.
Sankhya. So sometimes I feel that I get, I feel a lot of strength comes to me when I hear Kapiladeva or Sankhya from Bhagavad Gita, and it clarifies the why part, like it's more like clarifying the Sambandha Jnana.
Yes. Exactly.
So in that sense, I was thinking that it's not that I necessarily have an impersonal tendency, but it's like the stage of devotion that I am in. This Sankhya strengthens my vibe aspect. So Sankhya in itself is not, like, sometimes I feel like there's a negativity towards Sankhya because the popular Sankhya is impersonal Sankhya.
Yes.
So we have this tendency of that Sankhya is... No,
we stay away from it.
Yeah, but the Sankhya that Kapiladeva or Bhagavad Gita is talking is very much needed, or it's the stage of
yes.
devotion.
Yes, it's right in Bhagavad Gita, three times. And bhakti, Bhagavad Gita is about bhakti. So it's an element, an essential element to know what's what. And the impersonal is everything comes from nothing. And here's the everything. It can either come from nothing or it comes from Brahman, but the impersonal or void. And in modern language, it's metaphysics. And modern metaphysics is simply material. There's no God behind metaphysics. Modern atheistic metaphysics. And people like it. They can, you know, go to romper room and go have a party in metaphysics. Speculate till the cows come home and have a great time. And there's no God in the picture. And that's the negativity from the Vaishnava point of view. But, you know, obviously, Krishna speaking, and Kapila speaking. Kapila, we heard yesterday evening from Padma Purana, he spoke to Lord Brahma. He spoke to Bhrigu and the demigods. He spoke to a brahmana who then had a student who spoke to Janaka in Mithila. So, you know, it's for those who are fixed in bhakti. And it helps, exactly as you're saying, it helps one be fixed in bhakti. You have something more.
Well, I just
looking at my notes from yesterday, and there was a Prabhava avatar. Is that the same as Amsha
yes.
avatar?
No, Prabhava is a category of Amsha. Then the Prabhava category is they do not exhibit the fullness of the potencies of Vishnu. And then there's two divisions of those. Just mentioned. Yes?
Mentioned about hearing.
I did.
I had a question on chanting. Like, you mentioned about the four things that can help in cultivating the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So, from a chant, when we are hearing, in most of the cases, we are in a group, we're hearing, and probably it's my. It helps, okay, when we are hearing as a group. Okay, but when we do same thing, like when we do chanting as a group, I feel okay, it helps. But whenever, at least I do it alone. I feel okay, the mind is distracted, and Srila Prabhupada says that we should be having a genuine cry for the mother. I am so stoned. I don't know how the yoga, that cry doesn't come in. So, what can we do to at least make an attempt to cultivate that?
Well, there's a number of things. By hearing that one should, then you act on what you heard. I mean, just repeating back to you what you said. You've heard it, and it's not happening, then you cry out, Krishna, it's not happening. So you're crying out so that you can get to the stage where you can cry out. You know, then another. Well, on the there, it could add to the positive side, but here's one on the negative side. One on the negative side is we don't like to suffer. We're suffering averse. And one of the things that Krishna does to help us when we're not able to do what you describe, we're not able to do, Krishna puts in its own difficulty. He bangs us in the head. Krishna! You know, the difficulty comes, and then we cry out. So, that's a choice. It's an option. Just, you know, don't do it, but wish that you could do it, and Krishna will put you in some difficulty. But, you know, why put Krishna to that trouble? I have to put you through some difficulty. So, better is, you know, from it's a cult. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. Bhakti is a type of cultivation. And there's, the cultivation is acceptance. And acceptance requires from the heart, not just from the head. It's because from the head it's sometimes not, depending upon which way the wind is blowing. And it's from the heart, it's consistent. Then when that's there, Krishna gives the intelligence and you stay with it. So it's cultivation. Cultivation. That's bhakti. A type, it's exactly as in Prabhupada's language, a type of cultivation. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. We cultivate. It's this and then we cultivate it can grow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.